This is Lisa Henderson on Hoodsprayed FM with Daring Parenting. We're continuing our discussion with Evan Katz about anger. And Evan, I understand there are a number of ways to express anger. Could you outline some of those for us?
You bring up the subject of what we call defense mechanisms. If you'd like, I'll go over three or four of them because
good, let's do that.
One of them that I mentioned first is called projection. That's when we have feelings about ourselves that while we're not able to talk about it with someone else, and a lot of times don't even recognize it because we're the one experiencing it, when someone touches it or taps it or asks a question about it, we will see them as the one who is angry at us rather than being able to see that we are angry at ourselves.
Okay.
So we'll see them as trying to put us down, while in fact we're the ones that are putting us down, and we'll react towards them so that we can get the anger out, but not take it out on ourselves.
Gotcha. Okay. That's
another example is the one that you gave, and that would be rationalization. Rationalization is the idea that we find some reason that seems acceptable to ourselves to make what we did not so bad.
Right. Okay.
And the reason we do that is because we're not able to handle how we would feel about ourselves if we were to honestly say, I did this.
How much of this is normal, though? Like, I think we all kind of do it. Well, you know, I ran the red light because it really was turning amber and the person in front of me and da-da-da-da-da. When do we see that this has gone beyond, like, a normal defense mechanism? If it keeps happening over and over and over? Like, if
yes.
The child is, I'm a victim, it's all their fault, over and over?
That's certainly part of it. Earlier on, we talked about patterns of behavior. And this is certainly part of it. We start seeing a pattern that is different than patterns that existed before. That's the key. Now, if a child has always had low self-esteem and continues to have the same, they may have anger, but it's not necessarily a sign of anything different. But what you'll also see with this is you'll start to see overreaction. That is a big response to anger, is overreaction. And again, you could go back to the example with the test. Justification, justifying, which is kind of like rationalization. We justify many of these behaviors. We minimize what we did. As adults, we do this, and as children. The areas where we can see that it becomes detrimental and we can start wondering what's going on inside that child is when we know that they understand and have been taught values that would suggest that they know that they could have done better on the test. They know that they hurt somebody's feelings and it should matter to them. They know that the people they're hanging out with are not people that are good for them and are hurting themselves in, say, in school or with their parents.
So by the time it gets to the point of somebody's using alcohol or drugs or they're acting out, they've hit their parents maybe, they've gotten in physical fights, they've hit their girlfriend, something like that, it's gone way beyond then.
And what usually happens when we see that, that is the result of parents, unfortunately, who are not willing to recognize the signs of what's going on with their children.
You know, Evan, and as a parent, I see why those parents do it. I mean, it's like it's almost easier to go, this really isn't happening. Everything's lovely. Eventually they'll be in college and they'll have their happy life and their own children. And yet it's so unfair to our kids because I think they're continually crying out for us to pay attention.
Yes. Whenever they act out with anger, what they're really saying to you is, I'm in fear and I'm sad and I don't know what to do. And the only way I know how to get it out is to do this.
What about people that actually get addicted to the feeling, the anger, like addicted to the rage? Do you see this often?
I see this, but I would term it a little bit differently.
Okay.
And this happens a lot when I see men that come in as a result of assault or even attempted murder and things of this nature where it's developed so heavily. What happens with our young people is if they feel or perceive, or maybe it's really happening as a youngster, that they are, for example, not allowed to express their feelings. When we ask a child or we tell a child to be quiet, when they continue to express, maybe at that moment it's okay, but when we don't address it later and try only to deal with that initial behavior, the child learns from that, okay, I keep my feelings in, because that way I won't make a sound. And that's what I need to do for mom and dad to like me and for people to approve of me. So what happens is children that are like this learn to literally master skill and ability at hiding and stuffing and repressing feelings, particularly difficult ones, because those are the ones that come out in behavior, angry behavior. Mm-hmm. Remember that anger shield. Those are the ones that come out when they're feeling that fear and their pain. So when we have a child who, as you termed it, would seem addicted to their anger, what we're really looking at is a child who has come to rely on their ability to stuff and repress fearful and painful feelings. And the way that they've learned to do that is by creating anger, or that anger shield, angry behavior, as a way to keep people out.
And to keep the feelings down.
And to keep the feelings down, correct. So they may experience and use anger in situations they don't even need to. But if they were to let out one feeling, what their concern is, and this is all at an unconscious level, that all the other feelings may come out too.
And I've heard people say this, if I ever showed how angry I was, I would kill somebody. And
yes.
Most of the time, people really don't have that much rage inside. Or am I wrong?
Well, I think what's key is what you said was that they said that. Remember the difference between if I talk it out, I won't act it out. And remember the young man who learns as a child, don't express how you feel. Don't make a sound, because if I do, I'm not going to be approved of. Or if I say how I feel, I'm going to be criticized. Or if I express my feelings, no one will pay attention to me. So that child keeps it inside and says those exact words to himself and is left only with himself and his own mind, his own low self-esteem, and his assumptions of how other people see him. So finally, if that builds up to a certain point, rather than talk with anyone about it, even unconsciously, if they're in the vicinity, if you will, of a bat or a gun or what have you, they may in fact act out their feelings, even though it has nothing to do with their thought process.
We've spent a lot of time talking about, because I think this is so important for us to catch these hallmarks early on. But what about the solution? To me, I've never, and this is why I've really welcomed this opportunity to talk to you, because I hear anger management. How the hell do you manage your anger? Like, what do you do? What do you tell kids to do to get that in check? And is it ever okay to express your anger outwardly?
Well, this is the biggie. And this is what we as parents are always looking for. The biggest thing I'd like to express to parents, and most of them, if they're honest with themselves, will identify with this, because even myself as a parent, I've done this, because we're human beings and we make mistakes. We will be more concerned with muffling and stifling the behavior at the moment than we are with going back and following up and dealing with the causes of that effect, and the effect again being anger. So how do we do that? Well, there's, you know, I'm going to suggest as a parent now, and then show you a little bit what I do as a therapist.
Okay.
As a parent, it's very, very important when a child is behaving in such a way, whether it's subtle or passive aggressive, or if it's very aggressive, like the fist through the wall, mm-hmm. to indicate to them in no uncertain terms that it's not acceptable, and that if they continue to do it, they're going to be consequenced. However, we want to let that child have their autonomy, whether they're male or female, and say, you know, I do not have power over you, which in a sense is saying you have power. And I cannot decide for you what you're going to do, which again is saying, you know, I am going to allow you to make your own decisions. I'm not in charge of those anymore. However, I'm able to do the same. So while I'm going to give up the need to try and control you and control your behavior, I am going to lay down standards and rules for you to choose how you want that behavior to be dealt with. Instead, one of the ways that we as parents can begin to manage children who are starting to express patterns of behavior, it could be coming home with alcohol on their breath or smoking a joint, and we talk to them about it, but they do it again. It certainly can be that fist through the wall. Rather than try and control their behavior through force, instead, we want to give them control of their own behavior, which is a way of saying to them, look, I trust your ability to do the right thing. But we give them structure at the same time. So we say, while I trust your ability and while I can't control you and you're going to have to make your own decisions, you need to understand that if you do this, X is going to happen.
So let's say if you go to school and you get in a fist fight in the parking lot after the football game and you get arrested, that's your consequence.
I'm not
bailing you out. That sort of thing.
Yes. And now that may be one parent's solution. And I think that instinctively, parents know at some level to do one of two things. Either they know what seems regulated and appropriate consequence, mm-hmm. or if they can put their ego and their pride aside, they know who to call, or a friend, or a therapist, or maybe their mom or dad, and say, what would you do in this situation? I think it's very helpful for parents to have support groups where they are able to contact each other either on email or by telephone or even individually and say, I had this situation with Johnny last night. What would you have done? Because one person may say, I will not bail him out.
Right.
The other one may say, you know, under no circumstances do I want my child in that environment. But when they come home, they may say, you no longer can drive the car.
Well, and Val McGarry is here to tell us about what is the responsibility of the parents, what's the responsibility of the child, and what's the responsibility of the school system when it comes to our children.
Well, you see, we have to pick up where the parents leave off. And if there is a really sad trend that I'm noticing in coming back into education, it's not that modern parents are worse than parents in my time. I had to learn just as they're doing. It's just that I notice these days that children are so used to being told what to do that we become the same white sound. So we have to transfer that responsibility to them. My good behavior begins with me. If I am well behaved, the next person is, the next person is, the next person is, because we're all doing what we know really is good behavior. You can't pull another child's hair or his ears or whatever it happens to be. And similarly, we have all over the library, and I do remind them every now and then, that lovely thing from Dr. Seuss, you have brains in your head. You have feet in your shoes. You can steer yourself in any direction you choose. And I use it even as far as grade 7. Because at grade 7, they're starting to push the envelope. They're getting ready for that flight out of the nest. In South Africa, they go into high school. And they become totally victims of their hormones. The hormones are barking. We always say that of them. The hormones are barking. And they're delightful because that revolt is that whole preparation, just like a fledgling mm-hmm. about to leave the nest. They're hopping on the branch. You can't tell me which branch to hop on. So I do try to say to them, you've got two paths to choose. You can choose the one that might for a little while give you satisfaction because you're tilting at windmills. You're expressing your revolt. Or you can choose the one where you're not acquiescent, you're not passively obedient, but where you say, I'm going to take this way because I know that it is the best for me and for me to fit into the kind of school society and home society that I want to be in. So you're not always versing the person who's supposedly the parent or the teacher who supposedly is in charge.
I think, too, sometimes we're so, like, embarrassed as parents to admit, oh, my gosh, my child is not perfect, that we're so reluctant to say, I need help with this. I'm so lucky I have an aunt who's only 10 years older and has 4 grown children. So I call, oh, my God, you know, and it's like, she said, sometimes all you do is just pray that you can get them out of high school alive.
Yes.
And, you know, and it's kind of, she's told me a couple of times, don't overreact. But I also, too, wonder if, like, when we're seeing some of these signs, if it wouldn't be helpful if we feel like maybe we're not the go-to person for the kid to say, hey, why not see a counselor? Why not see a therapist?
That's an idea. And another one, before you maybe or feel a need to go to a counselor, is to say, you're pretty close with Miss Williams, your teacher in geometry. Why don't you go talk to her about this stuff if you don't feel comfortable talking to me? And then we make contact with Miss Williams without getting specifics and say, did Johnny come and talk to you today?
Mm-hmm.
And if he didn't, then we can address that at that time. But remember, as you made a very good point regarding our feelings and that need to overreact. When we overreact to the child who winds up in detention one night, and this is towards the beginning of this process, when we overreact and become overly involved in our own fear and our own embarrassment, the child instinctively knows there's a lack of connection and that we're wrapped up in us and fixing our needs rather than hearing their behavior. Remember, their behavior is a substitute to their verbal communication.
And really, in essence, hearing their pain.
Yes.
And seeing who they are.
And putting our feelings and needs aside to address theirs so that they feel that they are important and loved as a child.
Now, here's one of the things that I did with my kids, especially my son, is I could tell he was like angry and he needed to get it out. And he had a little punching bag.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you can punch that. You cannot hit another person. You can't hit me and you can't hurt yourself. You can pound on that thing. And I would hear him sometimes in there pounding the pillow or pounding the punching bag over and over. And he'd come out and he'd be fine.
Right.
So I was trying to convey it's okay to be angry, but you can't hurt yourself or somebody else. But I don't know. I mean, is that a solution?
I think that's partial, and it's not a bad idea. I know when I was a young man, my mother bought me a tantrum mat. And I'm in fact in the process of mass producing those and putting them on my website because
great
there is
idea.
Therapy there. However, to take your example, let me use the same thing.
Okay.
To have your son go do whatever they want with the punching bag and give the message, again, that it's okay to get angry. And I agree 100% because that is a natural feeling that we're given in order to help motivate and protect ourselves and all kinds of things. It's not okay to hurt yourself or someone else. So after they're done, the deal is like this. Go down and punch and jump on a mat and do whatever you need to do. And then I want you to come back up here and we're going to talk about whatever is going on, particularly with young men, because their ability to get out, not ability, but their skill and their familiarity with talking about their feelings is minimal. But if they do not talk about those feelings, even at a somewhat superficial level, they will act them out. That's why we see, in my opinion, much more violence among young men and moving into adulthood than we do among women. Women are it's acceptable for women to talk about how they feel at any level. They certainly are expected, if you will, to talk about their fear, their pain.
Mm-hmm.
They'll cry usually right after or before getting angry. Young men will not do that. So if they don't talk about it, they're going to act it out.
What a perfect way to kind of encapsulate everything that you believe in and that you've helped us portray to the parents that are listening. So thank you, Evan, so very much.
I appreciate it very much. I really enjoy the opportunity to share this with you.
Thank you. Evan Katz, psychotherapist. You can go to his website for more information and also to find out about the anger evaluation.
www.theangerguy.com. Val, what do you think the importance of holding boundaries or consequences are?
If they don't understand why there are boundaries there, they're not even aware of having boundaries, especially if they come from a family where there's inconsistent parenting. You know, one day they're allowed to do this, next day they're not allowed to do that. If you're consistent, even if it was only three rules that you put up on a piece of paper on the fridge and go through those three with them, then that if I say come to the dinner table, you know that we always eat at 6:37, whatever time it happens to be, don't tell me you're very busy and you can't come, give me a good reason, not because you don't feel like coming, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You talk it through. Again, it can't be something, I have a bad temper, my mother always told me, and I've had to learn over the years to control it. Because I tend to fly off the handle. You have to give them their space because that space is so temporary. Coming back to that same idea that you get one chance, maybe two, and then you don't have a chance anymore. So if it's a negotiated boundary, if it's negotiated between you, do we both understand? You want to ask me any questions about it? Do you want to tell me about something? Do you feel unhappy about something, about these rules? Then let's work through it. Mm-hmm. But once we've done it, those are the three rules, and they're on the fridge to remind me, and they're on the fridge to remind you. They don't always work, and sometimes you've got to change them. quite often you have to change them. For example, I said to my children from the time they got to grade 7, they had to prepare their own lunches for school. So it turned out very positively with our daughter because she did a science project on what constitutes a really healthy lunchbox. And that was very interesting because she took it positively. Our son did it another way. He isn't a confrontational person. So what he did was he made peanut buttered sandwiches every single day for the whole of his high school. I asked him once, "Aren't you tired of peanut butter?" "No." It was only after he left school that I talked to a friend of mine who used to make gourmet sandwiches for her son. He had the most delicious, delectable sandwiches, and he was sick of them, as we discovered afterwards, and he used to swap with Michael because he liked peanut butter sandwiches. In other words, he was doing what I'd asked him to do, prepare your own lunch. He just traded off at school. And that was very important. It was such a funny way to learn how he'd learned the lesson. And that's what he is like. He's not a confrontational person. I don't like confrontation myself. But he'll find a way around it. And I think that's got a lot to do with his father. My husband's like that. He always engaged with them in conversation. He was always interested in knowing what they were doing. It was only in retrospect you realize that what you did say and what you did do came out okay. Mm-hmm. Another thing about rules and sharing chores, for instance, children need to feel that you share chores with them. They often are seeing parents who are harassed and stressed and having to balance home and work and marital problems and all that kind of thing, the kind of daily financial stresses. If they were given a part in it, they become a member of the team.
Thank you so much to Val McGarry, who's sharing experience from a teacher's perspective and also as a mother. Daring Parenting will continue on Hoodsprayed FM in just a moment. We're going to find out from a mom one of the greatest concerns on her mind: when is enough enough? And we'll have some answers on Daring Parenting on Hoodsprayed FM in just a moment.